Welcome to the Property Buyer Podcast. Join me, Rich Harvey, multi-award-winning buyer's advocate and CEO of Property Buyer, where we explore the world of real estate and help you make informed decisions about buying or investing in residential and commercial property. Our show features expert interviews, market insights, and practical tips for navigating the complex world of real estate. Whether you're a first-time buyer, a seasoned investor, or simply curious about the property market, our podcast is for you. Join us as we share our knowledge and experience and help you achieve your property goals. Welcome everybody to our very first episode of the Property Buyer Podcast. Today we'll be talking about picking the bottom of the market. With interest rates rising 9 times in the last 12 months, we've seen a significant pullback in demand and property values dropping in response to lower borrowing capacity. But how much further will the RBA go in trying to smash the inflation rate down? The impact on borrowers is likely to be felt most severely in the next couple of months as many borrowers come off fixed rates. As interest rates reach their peak, is now the time that the property market will also bottom out? It's a perplexing question, and many economists and experts have very different views about whether we'll have a hard or a soft landing in this property market. So to help unpack this question and many more around the direction of the property market, I'm privileged to have Tim Lawless, Executive Director of Research of CoreLogic, with us today. Welcome, Tim.
Rich, g'day. Thanks for having me on your show.
Great to have you as always. Love your insights. But Tim, just before we jump into all of the questions, I'd just really like to start with a thought of the week. And every week I'll be sharing that with our audience. And today I've got a quote from Jim Rowan. And he says that if you don't design your own life plan, chances are you'll fall into someone else's plan. And guess what they have planned for you? Not much, says Jim Rowan. What do you think of that kind of quote, Tim?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Everyone should have their own objectives and their plan, but I think it's probably even worse than that. If you don't have, or if you're going towards somebody else's plan, chances are you'll get used and abused.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I've heard it quite similar. It's like you can live your life by design or default. And I think a lot of people live their lives on automatic. They don't really think about having plans, particularly around properties as well. It's sort of in the too hard basket. It's like, oh, too difficult. But, you know, we love all the research that CoreLogic produces. That's just brilliant. So, yeah. Well, look, let's get into the topic. And it's picking the bottom of the market. So, Tim, to kick off, my first question to you today is, what's been the main impact of all of these 9 consecutive interest rate rises on the property market and the economy to date?
It's hard to pick just one because, I mean, the impacts have been multifaceted. But of course, I think when you start to look at rising interest rates, obviously the context is really important. We've seen rates rise off emergency lows. We never saw interest rates at 0.1% before. So the fact that they are moving higher rapidly comes after a really rapid diminishment or reduction in interest rates as well. But I think it's fair to say with the cash rate rising so much and likely to rise further from here, it's already pushing the economy into a contractionary zone. So I think the RBA is very conscious and needs to be very careful about how far do they push interest rates. Mm. I think the biggest impact, of course, has been a reduction in borrowing capacity. But beyond that, for the broader economy, there's also been a substantial drop in consumer sentiment. And that has a much broader reaching impact rather than just, impacting on housing markets. When you have recessionary lows in consumer sentiment like it is at the moment, it means that people just stop making high commitment decisions. And, of course, that has a flow-on effect to all sectors of the economy. At the moment in the housing market, of course, we're seeing a lot less buying activity, but also a lot less selling activity. Both the supply and the demand side has been quite significantly impacted by the fact that people just don't want to make a high commitment decision when they're not really too certain about the economic outcomes ahead of us, their ability to hold a job, where interest rates are going to land. So yeah, it is quite broad reaching.
You've made a good point about consumer sentiment being down and the event we did the other day at CBA where Stephen Halmarik, the chief economist there, was talking about the lows in consumer sentiment. And obviously the last two lows, we're now down at the same level as back at 2008 when we had the GFC and also March 2020 at the start of COVID, which is down about 80 points. Have you ever seen consumer sentiment being this low before apart from those times?
Well, it's really rare. If you look at the index that goes back to the 1970s, sentiment was briefly lower than this during the 1990s recession, or the early 1990s recession. Not much so. So we're pretty much at recessionary lows at the moment. And the fact that we're seeing consumer sentiment as low as what it was during the global financial crisis is a pretty telling sign. And by the way, sentiment didn't hold very low through the GFC. It fell to those very low levels and then bounced back pretty quickly because there was a whole raft of stimulus coming to the economy. Interest rates came down. We saw a whole bunch of fiscal support, kind of like what we saw at the beginning of the pandemic. I think it's fair to say we're not going to see that lifeline being thrown now, considering we're coming out of a huge amount of stimulus.
Do you think we're going to have recession? What's your opinion on that? Do we hear that word bandied about and people put percentages on it? What's your view on that?
I think it will probably feel like we're in a recession, but the technical definition of a recession being two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth doesn't look all that likely. And again, just referencing Stephen Hormerick's points back at the CBA, it's probably a fairly that definition of a recession being two quarters of negative national account numbers probably isn't all that fitting. It's a really, really broad definition. So I think for you and I and everybody else, it'll feel like we're in a recession, but the reason we won't see two quarters of negative GDP growth just comes back to, commodity markets are pretty strong. There's a lot of major infrastructure projects going on. Company profitability, we know, is looking pretty strong at the moment as well. It's really going to be more a consumer or a household recession than anything else.
I'll just pick up on a good point you made back in the GFC 2008. You said it was pretty down, but it bounced back quite quickly. I distinctly remember that year. I think I bought two or three properties in that year because the sentiment was so low. But it's interesting to see how quickly sentiment can change as well. What do you think is going to come? Do you think we're going to have a few more rate rises, and do you think sentiment's going to stay low, or do you think it'll come back sort of fairly strongly, fairly quickly?
My guess is that there's probably at least two more rate hikes ahead of us, March and April, and maybe another one in May. That seems to be the consensus view, but hopefully inflation's come down more substantially or quickly than what the RBA is expecting. So with that in mind, I wouldn't be surprised if sentiment does hold around these very low levels, maybe even drop a little bit further, considering we're now seeing a bit of a loosening in labor markets as well. The unemployment rate at 3.7% is still, around generational lows, but just starting to tick a little bit higher. So that could weigh on consumer spirits as well. But to your point, Rich, I think once we see a stabilization in interest rates and inflation getting under control, we probably will see consumers becoming a little bit more optimistic about what the future holds. And most forecasts for interest rates are that even though we're set to see further rises, the higher interest rates go, the faster they're going to come down as well. And with that in mind, you'll probably find that consumer sentiment starts to improve quite quickly as we move into that that easing trajectory of interest rates. And hopefully can put the worst of this downturn behind us.
Yeah, do you think with low sentiment that there's actually a window of better opportunity for buyers out there at the moment, given that we've had quite substantial correction in the property market in most, or certainly Sydney and Melbourne, but do you think there's an opportunity for buyers to sort of have a window perhaps in the next 3 to 6 months that they'll probably won't get for another couple of years?
Well, I think it's fair to say it is a buyer's market. Even though there's not a lot of choice at the moment, stock levels are very low, we're definitely seeing homes taking longer to sell. Vendors are offering larger discounts. Clearance rates, they bounced back a little bit through February, back to around average levels, but certainly not anywhere near the sort of frothy heights we're seeing through the upswing. So I think for buyers, yeah, there probably is some good opportunities. Not just the fact that prices have come down, but also that, that buyers for a change hold most of the leverage now. So, yeah, I think for those people that are willing to swim against the current and buy countercyclically, there's always going to be opportunities through a downturn. The hard part is things like getting the confidence to actually make that decision, and also qualifying for finance has clearly become a little bit more challenging as well.
Definitely, yeah. I'm curious to know what you're seeing out there at the moment. Do you think that the demand for property is high at the moment? Is it softer? And is the media kind of painting a different picture to what's actually happening on the ground? What's your view on demand for property at the moment?
It's definitely softer than what it was, keeping in mind through the end of 2021, we were going through near record highs for the amount of housing market activity, for the number of home sales. So if we just look at our year-on-year numbers, I'm looking at the 3 months of sales activity estimated over the 3 months to February this year, compared back to the same time a year ago. And on that estimate, transactional activity is down about 27%. Nationally, a lot more in Sydney and Melbourne, down about 37 to 38% in Sydney and Melbourne, nearly 30% in Brisbane. But then go to somewhere like, Perth or Adelaide, and you can see that activity is actually holding relatively firm in those markets. In fact, we're seeing home sales above the five-year average in both of those cities, reflecting a much more affordable environment, the fact that there's a pretty decent demographic tailwind behind them as well. So it's different from region to region, but yeah, I think it's fair to say we've seen activity falling from record highs and now tracking nationally about 12% below the five-year average.
I think we've certainly seen a really mixed bag of results. Like our company, we service Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, the entire East Coast, and we have connections across Australia, but we're seeing a bit of a different picture. The media paints a bit of doom and gloom, but honestly, in some areas, there's 30, 40, even 50 groups going through properties in Sydney, and certainly Brisbane we're seeing is holding pretty strong. So it just depends on the suburb, I think, very much. And I think the message for buyers out there is you can't just take one statistic and use that in isolation to make a decision. I think it's really important.
That is so true.
People just look at, the average is high so much. Yeah.
If you look at the microcosm of property, even just drilling below, say, the capital city layer of Sydney. So on our Sydney data, we've seen housing values fall by about 13%, well, 13.5% since they peaked about a year ago. But if you drill below the surface, you can see the unit sector has been a lot more resilient after not recording as much growth through the upswing. Most of those declines have been in the upper quartile of the market so far. So your more expensive end of the market's really worn the brunt of the downturn. But that's also the sector of the marketplace that's really driving the loss of momentum in a downturn and recorded a subtle rise over the past month and also the past 3 months as well. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say the market is very diverse. And as you start drilling down below the, peeling back the layers of the onion, so to speak, there's going to be a lot of diversity and probably also some opportunistic buyers. When you think about Sydney's upper quartile, it's down about 17, nearly 18% in value. I think there's going to be a lot of people rubbing their hands together saying, well, finally, I can buy into the eastern suburbs or the lower North Shore or the northern beaches where price declines have been more substantial.
Yeah. Look, Tim, this is the question of the moment. Is this around picking the bottom? Are there any clear signals that we've reached the bottom? When do we know that we're at that peak, where that trough?
Well, you know it after the fact.
Yeah, that's right.
The easy way to put it, isn't it? Yeah, it is a bit of a mug's game, to be honest, to try to pick the bottom of the market. And I think anyone that does it is typically a more factor of luck than anything else. But the sort of things we look for to suggest the market's moving through its trough would be obviously looking at our high frequency value indices and looking for them to be bottoming out. And it looks like that's happened this month. Although, as I said, I think there's still some downside risk ahead of us that we could see price declines reaccelerate. We'd also look for things like a turn in credit flows, like housing finance, which we're not really seeing any evidence that's starting to move back into positive territory. We look for a change in how long it takes to sell. Typical days on market running out now in most cities that are recording a downturn. And discounting rates have also flattened out a little bit. So there's a bit of a hint there that we might be approaching the bottom of the cycle. And you'd also look for things external to the market, like obviously a pause or a peak in interest rates, or at least a confidence that we've hit a peak in interest rates. should be a fairly firm inflection point for both confidence and housing demand. Look for things like starting to see vendors becoming more active. That would be a sign of more confidence coming back to the market as well.
So how much credence or value do you put on auction clearance rates as a signal of market sort of activity or direction in terms of the bottom of the market or top of the market?
It depends on the city. So there's auction-centric cities and there's cities where auctions are quite rare. So go to Sydney or Melbourne or Canberra. It's pretty normal for more than a third of properties to be listed by auction in those cities. Adelaide and Brisbane, they did see a lot more properties being taken to auction through the latest upswing. But generally, maybe 15% of properties are taken to market in those cities. Go to Perth and it's only like 2%. It's not a very auction-centric culture at all. So if I overlay CoreLogic's Home Value Index, or HVI, and correlate it or overlay it with auction clearance rates, the correlation's actually almost 100%. It's really firm. So it's a really good timely indicator of the fit between buyer and seller expectations. I think in that sense, it is a really good timely indicator. But I'd generally be relying on it in those more auction-centric markets rather than somewhere like, say, Perth or Hobart or Darwin, where auctions aren't really all that popular.
Excellent point. And just for our audience out there, look, if you do have a question for us, please, we do have a thing called a speak pipe, which will be on the site there, and you can actually record your question, and we will try and get to it next week. So feel free to ask any questions for anyone out there that would like to participate. So Tim, I want to just turn to a bit of data, if we can, just looking around the country. I'd love to start with just asking, what's the situation with listing volumes in the major capitals and major areas around Australia at the moment? I mean, the data I see for a lot of, on average, it's down somewhere between 20 to 25%, the five-year average. But how does it vary across the states?
It's tight pretty much everywhere. So I'm looking at, there's two measures of listings that I think are really important. There's the flow. So that's how many newly advertised properties are being added to the market on a monthly basis. And then there's the stock, which is your new listings plus how many homes have been sitting there, your relistings. Yep. So, and both measures are really important. So your new listings trend, if I look at the sort of the headline numbers across Australia, new listings are about 13% below the five-year average, nearly 17% lower than a year ago. And we've been seeing the flow of new listings tracking below the five-year average since the onset of spring last year. So there really wasn't much of a spring at all in 2022. And interestingly enough, that coincides with when we started to see a loss of momentum in the rate of decline as well. So I think that low level of supply has really helped to keep a floor under housing prices to some extent. Then if you look at total listings are tracking about 26% below the five-year average at the end of February, about 3% lower than a year ago. And if I look across all the capital cities, total listings are down on average pretty much across all the major capital cities. There are a couple of exceptions in the smaller markets, like Hobart, for example, is now seeing total listings about 39% above the five-year average. And nearly 80% above what it was a year ago.
I reckon that's just profit taking because they've had a massive rise in Tassie.
It's been the strongest market over the medium to long term, but also it's the context. Hobart listings, say, a year ago had never been that low. Homes were selling in like 9 or even 5 days, I think was the lowest point for a medium term market. So to see listings rise by 80%, it's off a really low base. So that's why I'm not really too alarmed by Hobart. We're still seeing listing numbers quite a bit lower than what they were, say, back in 2014 and 2015, when that market was quite a bit weaker. We've got the major markets, Sydney down about 12% on the five-year average for total listings. Melbourne's down about 4%. Brisbane about 35% less than average. So, yeah, that's what I meant by there's not a great deal of choice out there for buyers. So even though it's a buyer's market, there is a little bit of skewing towards sellers, just in the sense that there's not a great deal of competition among sellers at the moment.
Okay. And talk to us about just a quick snapshot again on pricing. Which markets do you think have further to correct? I mean, obviously, we've seen a correction significant in Sydney, Melbourne. We're seeing Brisbane coming off its peak. I don't want to take your thunder here, but tell me what your thoughts are around on markets and how much further you think they've got to fall.
So I think it's fair to say there is still some downside risk for housing values to fall further from here. And I predicate that on the fact that we're likely to see interest rates rise at least another 50 basis points. So I think there probably will be some reacceleration in the downturn after our February numbers came in pretty flat. The markets where I think it will be most pronounced. Well, if you look at Hobart, again, Hobart's coming out of a really strong market. It's become quite unaffordable. As we talked about, listing numbers have risen quite a bit from the really low levels. That looks like the market where we haven't seen much of a deceleration in the rate of decline either. So I know it's a small market, doesn't really move the dial as such. Across the majors, I think the most resilient market is going to be Perth, without a doubt. You know, it's a market that's extraordinarily affordable. It was only in the middle of 2021 that we saw Perth move through a nominal recovery from its peak back in 2014. So it's very affordable. It's got a pretty decent economy, a lot of infrastructure projects underway, pretty connected to the mining sector, which we know is pretty strong at the moment as well. And then if you look at the three largest cities, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, I wouldn't be surprised if they move in a fairly similar fashion, probably some further falls from here. Sydney's already down since it peaked by about 13.5%. Consensus view on Sydney is around an 18 to 20% drop. It's, I think that they might be overcooking it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Another 5% down for Sydney, I suppose, isn't too unreasonable to expect from its current 13.5% drop. Melbourne's down about 9.6% from its peak back in February last year. I think Melbourne will probably be a little bit more resilient, simply because it's a bit more affordable. It generally wears the brunt of overseas migration, adding to demand.
Yep.
As well. And then Brisbane, again, I can't really see prices falling substantially from here. Brisbane's already down 11%, maybe another 4 or 5% added to that. And the reason I think Brisbane will be a little bit more resilient as well is it's got such a strong rate of interstate migration that's slowed down a little bit, but Southeast Queensland is still by far leading the nation for interstate migration growth, which goes straight into purchasing demand. And it's still relatively affordable compared to Sydney, not as much against Melbourne.
What's the numbers of people? I've heard a number around the last 2 years, 50,000 people have moved to Southeast Queensland corner. Is that sort of the rough figure that you've got in mind?
I'd have to look it up, to be honest, yeah. Rich. But yeah, it'd be up there. I mean, through the worst of COVID, Brisbane or Queensland as a state moved through a record level of interstate migration. And it's coming back a little bit now. And a lot of that was fueled by people leaving Victoria and New South Wales. So it's coming back now as more people sort of rebase themselves in the major capitals. But I'm guessing it's going to remain very high. And the regional trends as well have started to shift a bit as well. Less people, regional population growth also boomed, but that's starting to slow down, not necessarily because fewer people are moving to the regions, but we're now starting to see more regional residents moving back to the capital cities.
It's funny you say that. There was an interesting piece, I don't know if you saw it a month or so ago, called Regional Regret. And they did a survey of 5,000 people to identify if people were happy where they'd moved to. But I think they found that about a third of people that had moved to the regions had either moved back to the city where they came from or were planning to move back. So that's quite a significant proportion. It just goes to show that, you know, there's the tide goes out, the tide comes in again, doesn't it, with these?
Absolutely. Movements. It's probably a good testament, you know, if you are going to make a shift like that to rent first. To check things out and see if it's your cup of tea or
exactly,
not.
Exactly, exactly right.
Yeah, it's a pretty big financial impost, isn't it?
Exactly. Another quick question on Brisbane. Obviously, you mentioned migration is a big factor underpinning the flooring of pricing, but what do you think the Olympics will add to it in 2032? Do you think that's going to be a major driver or a bit of icing on the cake for Brisbane as a long-term buy?
It's definitely a net positive. Like it's better than not having the Olympics, that's for sure. But I think there's a lot of hype around Brisbane's Olympics that might be a little bit overstated. So I think the biggest driver for Brisbane around the Olympics is going to be the capital investment, the infrastructure spend, the productivity improvements, the increased level of transport infrastructure. A lot of that was already underway, like the Cross River Tunnel that's opening up in the Gabba and in the CBD as well. I mean, they're game changers, and they were already underway prior to the Olympics being won. But it's good to see a lot of these projects now being fast-tracked. Obviously, there's going to be a lot more labor coming in as we build a lot of the projects and the athletes' villages and improve the road system and so forth. I think that's where the benefit to the Brisbane housing market from a demand perspective comes from, and that will have some longevity to it. It's not just about the Olympics. It's, you know, the productivity improvements that last a long time. The Olympics themselves, it'll put Brisbane on the map to some extent, but I think that will be a temporary phenomenon, you know, a bit of a time in the sun. But the biggest, factor for Brisbane's Olympics will be in the lead up and all this infrastructure that's being delivered. So yeah. I think anyone that's looking to take advantage of that should be really taking advantage of it now, because that's when you start to see the benefits flowing through.
Well, I certainly did last year. I bought two properties in Brisbane last year, Tim, and happy I got in when I did. So another question for you is just, around how buyers should approach the market. Like, how should buyers, given that interest rates are rising, what do you think the mentality or the approach that buyers should take in this kind of environment?
It's easy to be swayed by environmental factors, by interest rates, by sentiment, by what everyone else is doing. But I think that the firm advice I would give buyers or prospective buyers is just buy in your own time frames. Make sure your budget's right, that your life situation's right, that you're able to save a bit of a deposit. Trying to time your really high commitment purchasing decisions with interest rates and so forth is really hard. So I think for everyone, it's best just to try and buy in your own timelines. No doubt, obviously, you're going to be impacted by serviceability assessments becoming much harder and that type of thing, but that's just something you can't really control. So I think for buyers, just try to make sure you're doing it on your own agenda rather than trying to let the market dictate what your timing's going to be.
Comes back to our original quote at the beginning of the podcast here, doesn't it? You know, about trying to follow your own life plan. Well, look, I couldn't agree more. Exactly. I'm exactly the same. We advise our buyers, firstly, the market conditions are a factor, but it's not the main driving factor. The key thing for me is borrowing capacity. If you have borrowing capacity, I always say to my clients, use it or lose it, because you don't know if your circumstances will change. You could get sick and lose your income next year. And if you qualify for a loan and you've got borrowing capacity, that's a great way to build your wealth and to go forward. So I always say to people, don't try and pick the bottom of the market. I don't personally think it's wise to try and pick the bottom of the market. If you can, happy days, great. But I'm buying for the long term. I advise all of our clients to buy for the long term. You know, property is a clunky asset. You can't just trade it overnight and expect to make a profit. You've got lots of transaction costs, stamp duty, solicitors fees, agents fees going in and out. So you've got to make sure that you're going to hold it for enough period of time that the capital growth does the heavy lifting to get you through to become a profitable strategy. So just on that, Tim, when do you think might be the best time to sell a property?
Well, I'd offer the same advice.
Right.
It's really based on individual decisions and their own agenda and their life situation. So again, at the moment, I see a lot of sellers, prospective sellers, are just holding off, trying to wait out the downturn. But arguably, if you'd sold early, then you'd probably be getting a better price for your property. So delaying decisions just because of what the market's doing or what the environment's doing, I think is pretty risky, and you never know how things will pan out in the future. So again, I'd be just using my own decision-making matrices and try to sell when I think it's right for me. And hopefully, if you're buying in the same market, it doesn't really make a great deal of difference.
That's a key point, exactly. I think a lot of people forget that if they are selling and buying or buying and selling in the same market, the trade over should really not be much different. I mean, there was a time, I think, in the middle of COVID where properties, I remember in Brisbane and potentially in Sydney, properties were trading in like 14 days. It was crazy. Yeah. It was like they'd go on the market and they'd be sold literally in the first week at the first open. And it was just people clambering over each other. I mean, that was just crazy.
Absolutely.
Absolutely crazy times.
And if you delayed your decision, then somebody else just came and bought it out from under you.
So. Exactly. You know, so I think now we're heading back into a more normalized market where you've got a little bit more time to choose and you can pick and choose. But having said that, there's not a lot of choosing because we know that, you know, your total listings are down to 25%. So at the same time, and we don't know whether that's going to improve. I guess another question for you, Tim, is how have you seen the property market cycle play out over the many decades? As your experience being a property research director, do you think these property cycles are going to take longer? Do you think they'll be shorter? What sort of trends have you seen with these property cycles?
Well, I think the main thing that I've seen, I've been doing this role for about 20 years, maybe a little bit more than 20 years now. So I've seen a few cycles, and it's generally the fact that a lot of people talk about, say, an 18-year cycle or a 7-year cycle. I don't think it's as easy to put a rule of thumb to something like that. Cycles are generally determined by changes in policy or by some sort of shock factors. So if you look back through the history of cycles in Australian housing markets, go back to say the early 2000s, absolute boom in housing prices caused by things like the first home buyers grant coming through and interest rates coming down. And then as interest rates started to rise, we saw housing prices peaking out and then falling, rising into 2008, just before the GFC, on the back of a really strong economy. Even though interest rates weren't falling, economic conditions were extraordinarily strong. And then the GFC happened, a global shock, and that sent markets tumbling. Sentiment fell, and then we saw a whole bunch of stimulus come into the market. Interest rates came down, housing prices rose because of that. And then coming into 2010 to 2012, interest rates were rising, housing prices were falling. And the last downturn we went through, which was between the middle of 2017 and 19, it was more about credit becoming less available. A couple of rounds of macroprudential policies from APRA, the Royal Commission on Banking, saw credit tighten up massively. And it wasn't anything to do with interest rates or economic conditions. So yeah, trying to pick the cycles based on rules of thumb, this doesn't work. It's always about changes in the broader environment or the policy situation that tends to dictate the beginning and end of cycles.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I mean, we've just got this new policy about a $3 million super cap. You know, there's always some crazy government policy that either hinders or helps the property market. So there's always an X factor out there, isn't there? So just are there any kind of trends or new trends that you think that buyers and sellers should watch for in the coming years in the property market that you're noticing?
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things to watch for will be, again, policy related. So watch out for any sort of changes in the serviceability buffer from APRA. I think it's fair to say a 3% serviceability buffer at the moment is a little bit onerous. If you're applying for a mortgage now, you're generally looking at a mortgage rate around the mid fives, but you're being assessed closer to 8.5%, nearly 9%. Well, 9% if you're an investor.
Isn't that crazy? That's just ridiculous.
Absolutely. So I wouldn't be surprised if APRA does actually pull that back to maybe a 2.5% buffer and a minimum rate of, say, 7% or something like that. Although that they did just release a statement last week saying that they're pretty comfortable with their current settings. Another thing to watch out for would be, say, changes in taxation policies. You mentioned the superannuation cap, which again, is a bit of an X factor. Don't think it's going to be all that impactful. It might push more demand in towards housing as people look to look for other asset classes outside of super. Look for things like stamp duty changes. That's probably already having an impact in New South Wales as first home buyers take advantage of a land tax, ongoing land tax, rather than paying an upfront massive stamp duty fee. So things like that, I think, will be important to look for any changes in policy. Outside of that, obviously, change in interest rates will be, I think, quite an important factor for the marketplace as rates come down. I think that's where we probably start to see housing prices trending a little bit higher again.
Mm. And Tim, look, it's been a great discussion with you today. Just a final wrap-up question. So just with our topic, do you think it's a wise thing to try and pick the bottom of the market? And do you think now is a good time to buy in this market at the beginning of 2023?
Yeah, it's. I think we've gone through the picking the bottom. It's hard to do, and if you're a rocket scientist genius, it's still hard to do. So, there's always going to be some factors that you just simply can't account for, and so much better to buy on your own agenda and your own timeframes and your own budget. And it's a good time to buy. Well, yeah, absolutely. I think any time's a good time to buy. Any time's a good time to sell, and it just goes in line with not trying to be pushed around by the market cycles and dictate your own timing based on your own life situation.
Fantastic. Well, look, Tim Lawless, Research Director at CoreLogic, thank you so much for your insights today. Really appreciate it, and really great to have you on the show.
Many thanks, Rich.
And look, thank you, audience. We really appreciate you listening. If you do have any questions, please reach out, and we'll look forward to engaging with you in our next exciting episode. Thanks again. Thanks for being with us on the Property Buyer Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any questions or would like further information about buying property, please visit propertybuyer.com.au and we'd be delighted to help. We have loads of free resources and market updates and recent articles for you to explore. We look forward to joining you on another episode very soon. I'm Rich Harvey. Thanks for listening.